Welcome to Security Wire Weekly, the CertSecurity.com podcast for February 21st, 2011. This is episode 5 for 2011, Compliance and Innovation. Well, thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Westervelt. Joining us is Joshua Corman. He's Research Director of the Enterprise Security Practice at the 451 Group.
For the vendor responses, people's roadmaps have taken a hard right towards other mandatory controls. So if you weren't on the chosen few, you were partnering with building or buying technologies that work. So by having adjacency, you were flourishing.
And then Barracuda Network's Chief Research Officer, Paul Judge, joins us. Paul serves as Vice President of Cloud Services of Barracuda Networks. He's a noted security expert, and he's also a venture capitalist.
In some ways, I mean, the compliance and the regulations have caused certain companies to go explore solutions that they otherwise would not have explored. Okay. Right? If you look at, say, for example, web application firewalls. Right? Web application firewalls, I think without the PCI requirements and without maybe some HIPAA requirements, but specifically PCI around web application firewall, that's a good technology that was needed that many companies would have overlooked for years.
And then Eric Ogren of the Ogren Group joins us. Eric was on the ground at RSA conference, spoke to a lot of innovative companies, and has some opinions on whether compliance hinders innovation. We'll talk with him very briefly. But before we get started, Mike Mimoso is joining us. Mike is editorial director of the Security Media Group here at TechTarget and CertSecurity.com. Mike, thanks very much for joining us. We're going to just talk briefly about some of the issues that emerged from RSA 2011. Mike, it's been about, what, your eighth conference that you've returned from?
Yeah, I think it's seventh or eighth one I've been to, yep.
How does this compare to the others?
You hear from the early days it was such a small kind of crypto conference, and now it's become a huge industry event. And,
yeah.
It was pretty busy as usual. I don't think that there was that overarching theme that we've had in past years. I mean, there's always been, like, compliance was the thing on everybody's top of mind, or last year was cloud. I don't think we had that so much this year, but, just year to year, I think it keeps growing, keeps getting busier, and it's a good place for the security community to kind of get together and network.
We were expecting certain themes to emerge from it. I mean, we were expecting to see a lot of cloud. Compliance always comes up. For government issues usually come up. The whole issue around public-private cooperation. Did we see much of the same? I mean, especially, let's start with the government piece. Did we have that message come from the government as usual?
Yeah, I attended the annual town hall meeting that Howard Schmidt runs, and he had a couple other folks on there, and that was definitely on the agenda. I think that they want to keep reinforcing this issue, even though I think most of the community thinks it's a pretty tired issue. But Howard had some real-world examples of public-private cooperation and how what he thinks, you know, how people are executing on it, and tried to, you know, install some life into it and make it kind of a tangible notion instead of this kind of, you know, intangible. I'm not sure he entirely succeeded, but yeah, definitely it was on the agenda again for sure.
His visibility has been pretty limited. We finally see him emerge at RSA. Does it seem like he's been doing a lot of work behind the scenes?
I think so. I mean, the people I've talked to seem to think that his lack of public visibility this year is a good sign that he is busy and trying to move things behind the scenes. And you know, there is a lot of work to be done. I mean, they're trying to overhaul FISMA. They're trying to, limit some of the public-facing systems that are rampant in these government agencies, and, you know, all the while trying to foster some kind of public-private cooperation, whatever that means, some kind of collaboration. So, yeah, I don't take it as a negative necessarily that he hasn't been out there in front this year. You know, it's probably true that it is an indication he's pretty busy.
Another issue is cloud security. The cloud security summit was going on.
Yep.
during the conference. I honestly didn't get a chance to even go to the Cloud Security Summit. The thinking was that we would hear less about the threats posed by the cloud and maybe see more security solutions, for lack of a better word, security products that would help secure the cloud this time. Mm-hmm. Did you see that?
I had some meetings with some vendors and some expert types around the cloud that last week at RSA, and the big thing that came out of my conversations was that the questions that customers are asking about cloud security are a lot different than even a year ago. I mean, a year ago, people were just trying to, you know, nail down a basic definition of what cloud computing was and understand, you know, infrastructure as a service, software as a service, platform as a service, what are the differences, how to secure them. The questions have evolved now, and I think that's a good sign. I think that, you know, the noteworthy thing is that this has all happened in a year and not in the general 3 to 5 year kind of time frame. So, you know, that leads you to believe that a lot of companies are really jumping into virtualization, into cloud services, and trying to figure out how to do it safely and you know, understand the risks and how to counter them.
The last topic is compliance. The PCI, the Payment Card Industry Data Security Standards, not expected to be any major updates for the next 3 years. Right. Did that result in less compliance language, less compliance discussion at RSA, in your opinion?
Yeah, from my opinion, I think so. I mean, it's always an issue, and it's always at the core of any kind of security project, any kind of security spending initiative. You know, that's kind of the overall reason for any kind of project right now. But, you know, in terms of anything new, you know, I don't think there was anything new in that direction that I saw.
Now, Mike, you actually sat in on the interview that we had with Paul Judge of Barracuda Networks. And I posed the question to him about whether compliance hinders innovation of security technologies. And I think he was kind of caught a little bit off guard. I mean, he did take a few minutes to think about that. And he said he thought that that it actually helped security, that it created more security innovation, didn't he?
He did. And I guess I didn't expect that answer, but it was definitely a thoughtful answer. And it made a lot of sense. I mean, I don't think he kind of linked the two, and I think that's kind of a mistake that a lot of people are doing, that, you know, because compliance is so dominant in the conversation around security that, you know, a lot of folks may not choose to continue to innovate, that a lot of budgets are going in that direction. And, you know, he made some good points that it's just that's probably not the case, and it was refreshing and interesting to hear what he had to say.
Yeah, it was. And to be fair to Paul Judge, this was a kind of a broad-ranging interview, everything from social network threats to cloud computing, and then this question on compliance. So thanks for taking the time out, Mike.
All right, Rob, thanks.
The 2011 RSA Security Conference has concluded, and there have been a number of issues that emerged from the conference, everything from cloud computing, government issues, but also compliance was a major factor that seemed to resonate among many of the people attending the conference. One of the issues that came up was whether compliance regulations hinder innovation of security technologies. Well, I had an opportunity to speak to two experts on the issue. The first is the 451 Group's Joshua Corman. Now, Corman heads the 451 Group's enterprise security practice. He's been an outspoken critic of the payment card industry data security standards. And I had an opportunity to speak to him prior to the 2011 RSA conference and asked him his views on compliance and its effect on technology innovation.
In 2011, there's going to be no expected changes to the PCI standards. Mm-hmm. Will that have any effect at all on spending patterns?
So their normal rhythm had been to do a major revision every 2 years. The last cycle would have been in October. They extended it now to a three-year cycle. So as far as PCI changes, we shouldn't expect any substantive change until October in almost 3 years. Mm-hmm. I've been one of the critics of PCI, comparing it to the No Child Left Behind Act for information security. It's not that things always need to change, it's just that the technology landscape, the adversary landscape changed so frequently, and the standard hasn't really substantively changed in a few years. So a lot of the people on the research side or that have been concerned that it might not be setting the bar high enough, we're pretty disappointed to see very few changes and no outlook for substantive change for several more years. The other thing it has is, as you hinted at, it has a pretty dramatic impact on spending. My research is circled around the chosen few, is what I call them. The PCI's chosen few are the 9 plus or minus a few required technologies necessary to pass an audit. And what happens in a cash-strapped economy is the CISO goes to ask for budget and often gets pushback from the CFO or CIO saying, will we be fined if we don't do this? So essentially, we've separated 70 or so product categories down to 9 that are mandatory, and everything else is discretionary. And the spending reflects that. Almost all of our spending is on this mandatory stuff. And although there's been some promising innovation, they're not finding fertile buying communities, and it's hurting their exits, their strategies, and they're having to retool and refine, even though they have fairly relevant technology.
So the vendors are responding to that?
The vendor response has been, and this isn't a new thing, this has been over the last few years, but the vendor response is people's roadmaps have taken a hard right towards other mandatory controls. So if you weren't on the chosen few, you were partnering with building or buying technologies that work. So by having adjacency, you were flourishing. So for example, PCI 6.6 in the last major revision focus people on application security. Let's do more of a secure development lifecycle or buy a web app firewall, also known as a WAF. The WAF players are doing great. They don't think the economy is bad at all. They've basically gotten anointed spending, whereas other technologies like DLP or network forensics, very relevant and much better suited to handle more advanced adversaries, are considered discretionary, elective, and found it much, much harder to find assured spending. So what we think's happened is now people are getting used to the compliance, they're getting used to the mandatory controls, and now they're really trying to drive cost out. So it's not so much a learning curve, it's an optimization phase. They may find that their log management was purchased and they checked the box, but they're not getting any value, so maybe they're looking for a managed log management service. This might allow them to drive some cost out of the compliance burden and maybe liberate some spending this year to do a few things beyond secure mandatory compliance. That's what we're hopeful and encouraging. Or it simply may be a way to just cut the cost and keep doing compliance and only degrade on us.
So what's the, I mean, there are some innovative vendors out there, and I know I just recently had a conversation with a vendor that makes a virtualized browser to isolate attacks in the browser. So there is some innovation despite PCI and these other regulations, isn't there?
Yeah, it's a different model. What we've been coaching our clients to do is if you had 2003 to 2006 type boomtown expectations about how you were going to take your product to the elite buyer and then down market and then you were going to have an exit or an IPO, that process that was pretty consistent for several years, and you often do some of these changes during the RSA timeframe, isn't going to happen anymore. There's just not as many mid-market buyers. In fact, we've described that there's a pretty pronounced schism between the once elite buyer and the middle has now become a laggard buyer. They just don't have the budget, the time to keep throwing more technology at it.
It sounds like you're blaming the people behind these regulations and not necessarily the vendors responding to them.
It's an ecosystem, so we're all to blame.
Okay.
In fact, you know, compliance has done a wonderful thing in such that security professionals have created the sin of keeping security as complicated as it actually is. So every time someone wanted an easy, simple step, you know, 12-step process to securing themselves, we said it's really hard, it's more complicated than that. That void has been filled by compliance, by other organizations, by best practices, and we have oversimplified it. So this is just a normal part of the evolution of the market. We're still pretty nascent. I'm hoping we don't stay stuck on compliance. The stakes are higher and the problem's bigger than compliance attempts to adjust. So we're going to be in a retooling year, I think. The innovation will continue. There will be buyers. It just won't go mid-market as quickly or as similarly as it has in the past.
So that was Joshua Corman of the 451 Group's point of view. And up next is Barracuda Network's Chief Research Officer, Paul Judge. Paul also serves as Vice President of Cloud Services of Barracuda Networks. He's also known as a venture capitalist. He heads Judge Ventures. It's an investment and business incubator firm. Judge Ventures focuses on opportunities in making the internet safe, useful, and entertaining. So he is looking for new innovative security technologies out there. In 2009, Barracuda Networks acquired PureWire, and that's a web security as a service company that Judge founded. Here's what Paul Judge had to say about compliance, its effect on innovation, and cloud computing.
There's been this ongoing discussion that I've been having with some analysts and security experts about how compliance is forcing companies to shuffle research and development dollars into areas to make their products kind of more compliance-oriented, whether it be for PCI or another regulation. Mm-hmm. And that may be resulting in less innovation. Mm. What's your take on that?
And is that happening?
Is that happening? So certainly there are certain industries where companies are driven by regulations to put together certain safeguards and systems and processes, controls and so forth. And so, yeah, that budget and that time has to come from somewhere. And so it's kind of one of those things that we're just talking about. It's a balance of how much time can be spent innovating and moving forward versus how much time is built in just better kind of improving your foundation that you have in place. And so, there's that compromise and trade-off you have to make, whether it be at a high level, at a CFO's budget, or if it's down at the details of what is development doing for the next 2 months. So it's always that, you know, kind of those hard decisions.
Yeah, we're talking in generalities, mm-hmm. but I mean, has innovation been stymied by compliance at all in the security industry?
No, I don't think innovation has been stymied by compliance. In some ways, I mean, the compliance and the regulations have caused certain companies to go explore solutions that they otherwise would not have explored. Okay. Right? If you look at, say, for example, web application firewalls, right? Web application firewalls, I think without the PCI requirements and without maybe some HIPAA requirements, but specifically PCI around web application firewall, that's a good technology that was needed that many companies would have overlooked for years. But with PCI saying, oh, here's what you need to do, here is right here on this section. Now, all of a sudden, a technology that's useful and was able to see more light and be more widely deployed. You know, similarly, email encryption. So something as an industry that we've been needing to do for the last 20 years, it sat there on the sidelines and wasn't moving anywhere. And all of a sudden, HIPAA came along, and now there's email encryption all over the place. We have gateway to gateway, domain to domain, SMTP over TLS, push and pull encryption. And so all of a sudden, boom, people were innovating. Because it was being driven by compliance. So I think in many cases, it's the opposite of that. It's not kind of compliance stimulating innovation, but it's kind of other way around. It's actually kind of fueling it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how much you kind of follow the whole movement of DNSSEC, but I'm curious as to your thoughts of if you think there's going to be any innovative security products that come out and to leverage DNSSEC.
I mean, there are some fundamental issues that we have been living with as an internet community, and at some point it would be great if we could deal with them. Right? There's some fundamental security issues around the trust model of DNS. Right? So it would be great if at some point we could deal with those things and kind of help secure the foundation some more. Smart guys like Dan's working on it. And, you know, we're working on our corner of the problem, and he's working on his corner of the problem, and everybody kind of approaches different corners, and we'll just kind of keep getting better.
How has this whole movement towards cloud-based services affected your business?
You know, I'm with Barracuda, joined Barracuda through an acquisition of a company I started called PureWire. Right. And obviously PureWire was really about having cloud-based web security. And so, you know, before I started PureWires, at a company, Secure Computing, we built a web security appliance. So we built an on-premise device for doing web security. And what I saw at the time was there were needs that companies had around remote employees and people that were moving in and out of the office and mobile devices that needed to be secure that an on-premise device could not accomplish. There were also security solutions that we wanted to provide. There were ideas and thoughts on how to do different types of security, but doing them in the cloud and being in the middle of like that user and that website would give you so much more flexibility to achieve those security goals. And so I think, you know, the move of doing things in the cloud, doing these services in the cloud really allowed that to happen. I mean, basically there were certain technologies that we couldn't have built 5 years ago. We couldn't have built 7 years ago. We were trying to squeeze it all in an on-premise device. But by having the flexibility of having the scalable cloud and the cost model that we're able to achieve, we're able to do things that we just wouldn't have been able to accomplish, like the depth of analysis that we're able to do within the latency bounds that we have. It's good. Like being able to do things, it's not just, oh, it sounds cool, but hey, we're really able to scale some things and deliver it to market in a cost-effective way that we could build a business on it, and now customers can actually have the protection of it. And so I think, you know, that's some of the things that people, I think, often overlook, because there's so much around the buzz of, you know, cloud.
That's
cloud.
The thing. Everything has the word cloud associated with it.
But there's certain elements where there's actually benefits from things being in the cloud. It's not just, oh, it's in the cloud, so it's better. Like, there's things that I can do because I'm in the middle of that user, no matter where that user is on Earth, and I'm in the middle of that user in the website they're trying to visit. Or if I need to look for malicious JavaScript, I'm in between, so I can run that JavaScript in the cloud before I push it back down to that user on their desktop. Or, you know, I can now consolidate your reporting across three different continents because it's all in the database and the log systems in the cloud. And so there's just kind of goodness and more flexibility that you get in certain cases. Like, everything doesn't just get better by moving to the cloud. There's several use cases where you get more better efficiencies.
What's more important, selling your appliance to a cloud service provider like Amazon, or selling it to the tenant of that service? Can you do that? Are we even at that point where that could be done?
Are we at that point? So yeah, so several of the appliances that the Barracuda has traditionally made as hardware appliances are available as virtual appliances. And with those virtual appliances, we have customers that deploy them in their private clouds. We have customers that deploy them in public clouds. And so, yeah, we absolutely have customers that do just what you described of deploying our...
But you're selling them to the tenant, right?
Typically, yes, we're selling them to the tenant. Now, I do have customers that are, like, say, for example, hosting providers. And they're hosting providers, and they buy for purchase from Barracuda, say, web application firewalls. And they use our actual physical appliances to deploy in their cloud to protect their hosting customers. And they may turn around and resell that as a value-added service to their customers. And so we do have customers that are the cloud provider, they're the hosting service, and they're using even our physical appliances to deliver value add to their
That's
customers.
So it can even work in a multi-tenant environment.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you, guys. Good conversation. Covered a lot of ground.
Up next, here's Eric Ogren of the Ogren Group. So, Eric, hey, thanks very much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, Rob. Happy to talk security anytime.
Yeah, so we're back from RSA. RSA Conference 2011 is over. Before we get into compliance and whether it hinders innovation or not, I'm curious, what was your thought? What are your overall general thoughts of RSA this year?
Well, you know, actually, I loved RSA this year, and I don't think I've been able to say that in 15 years. It's been amazing. I thought attendance was up. I thought it was like a real tangible sense of energy at the show. And actually, you know, I know we're going to talk about innovation and compliance, but I thought there was a lot more innovation at the show this year than I've seen in the past. And whether it's you know, application-level security and some of the integration of security with operations things. You know, Qualys talked about strategies for efficiency, and the whole linking of application intelligence to be able to bridge security and network operations teams. I thought it was a great show. I really did. And I've come go to that thing for a long time since 93, and I don't say that too often.
Were there a lot of companies, though, that, and now we're getting into the compliance piece here, were there a lot of companies that try to sell themselves as the compliance vendor? Everything has to do with compliance. It's either cloud or compliance, right?
Yeah. Well, I think it was an RSA conference zoning regulation. If you were going to have a booth, you either had to be cloud next or next generation. And if you didn't have one of those two words in your signage, yeah, you couldn't get in. And then so everyone was kind of abiding by those rules. The compliance story still plays. You know, it's weakening. It's, I mean, compliance is great because companies, in the sense that companies spend a ton of money on security for compliance. I mean, it just generates revenue for security vendors. But honestly, Rob, to be honest, I thought I saw less compliance signage this year than I saw in other years. And maybe that actually added to my positive reviews on the show. I finally saw more companies talk about what they did from a security standpoint, you know, what differentiated them from other vendors, than I saw, you know, buy our product to be compliant kind of thing.
Right, right. Yeah. And I wonder if that has anything to do with the fact that we're not going to be seeing any major changes. When I think of compliance, I immediately think of the payment card industry data security standards. But we're not going to see any major changes coming out of PCI for the next 3 years. So,
and I think that's a really, really good thing. I really do. It's I agree. And part of it is, I mean, if I took a thing at PCI, I mean, PCI has so many different security technologies they specify. And it's kind of hard to think of things that they've left out.
Right.
You know, so they kind of need a new segment somewhere, and they really haven't figured out the virtualization and those steps yet. And that's a little bit where they'll get in the way of innovation. I think the other thing that where I saw most of the compliance story actually was on automation. And I did see some of that, of how to automate compliance reports to drive the cost out of, you know, the audits.
Interesting.
And so even some of the application level security firewalls, you know, whether it's Palo Alto was great, and, you know, SonicWall had a honky machine. You know, some of the things they were talking about was also the fact that because they see all the applications that are actually running, they can produce compliance reports of what's on the network, as well as the segmentation, especially with regulated applications, so making sure that things are, you know, properly partitioned, and just, you know, do it automatically. And that, you know, that was kind of interesting.
So now I'm going to ask the direct question and see what you have to say. Do compliance regulations, does PCI hinder innovation of security technologies?
Oh, absolutely, of course. I mean, that's an easy one. That's a softball one, but yeah, it does. You know, the reason for it is, well, it might be a little bit indirect, but for one, you can't innovate a new type of security technology and find budget allocations and find customers that will buy it for PCI. I mean, we see that all the time with virtualization, right? I mean, it's how would you do an innovative virtualization security approach if it's not in the PCI spec? You would go to, I mean, the company would go to a prospect and they'd say, well, that's nice, but, you know, all of my security budget is dedicated towards this prescriptive kind of security steps. So, yeah, it absolutely does. I mean, it kind of leads into a couple of different things. You know, it leads into companies using the same words, so it makes it a little harder to differentiate, you know, in segments what different companies are doing. But it also means it's really, really, really hard to do anything innovative and new, because you almost have to look at something that already exists, that customers have already deployed, and, you know, innovate within that little silo. And so, yeah, so it really, really does hurt. No question. Mm-hmm.
Is there an answer for that? I mean, or is this just the way it's going to be moving forward?
I do think that the compensating controls or having something that's a bit more flexible that allows you know, some of the early adopters to say, we recognize this problem. Maybe it's segmenting users, keeping users away from data, but we're attacking it another way. I'm not sure what. Maybe some examples might be, you know, more end-to-end encryption or tokenization. Maybe it's using virtualization so the data never gets. If you're using big clients, you don't have to worry about DLP at the endpoints or device control at the endpoints because the data never gets out there. You know, It could be things like that, but I think there should be a way where a company, an auditor, can more easily say we meet the requirements and we're meeting it this way with some new technology.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and now, is that going to happen? Yeah, I don't think so. You know, I really don't. I think the attitude right now is, companies may choose not to even implement certain things of compliance and say, well, you know, we'll take the risk and just go with it. So it's, and we've seen that, you know, when people talk about, well, why is, I don't have the exact percentages, but, we're not 100% PCI compliant anywhere. So, and one of the reasons is companies look and say, well, I don't really need this kind of technology in my business is to be spending all this money operating it because, I mean, every security product comes with a security admin console that you have to train people to operate it, and it gets expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah. Eric Ogren of the Ogren Group, thanks very much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Well, yeah, I had a pleasure. It's always fun to chat, and anytime, Rob.
Well, that does it for this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts by going to our podcast landing page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. You can get all of the latest security news at our news page at searchsecurity.com/news, as well as our RSA coverage. Now, we have a separate page for the RSA coverage. It's searchsecurity.com/RSA2011. There are plenty of videos on there. There's some podcasts and, of course, news stories from our team that was on the ground there in San Francisco. Again, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.